Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Air with Dr. Pat Allen, Empowered Communication, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to the show. We're so glad you're here with us tonight. Remember the call-in number. It's 323-203-0815. Get your dialing fingers ready and get in the hot seat with Dr. Allen because she is live and on the air. Dr. Allen, how are you?
I'm just fine. And I want us to appreciate the Want Institute for sponsoring this show.
I agree with you. The Want Institute is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, which, of course, we would be glad to accept your tax-free donation to keep us not only on the air, but keep our products out there and relevant. If you want to find our products, it's easy to do. www.wantistore.com. You can find Dr. Allen's latest and most brilliant book, It's a Man's World and a Woman's Universe, because, of course, she is amazing. The book is amazing. And you can find her other products, too. Over 50 Dating, great set. Oh, my goodness. And don't forget, one of the things that Dr. Allen does is private appointments. And we do some very special appointments. I don't think anybody else does them. One of them is Life Scripts. That is amazing. And you know how to book one of those appointments? You email info@drpatallen.com. It couldn't be easier. Anywhere from 15 minutes to as long as you need. And there you have it. One-on-one with Dr. Allen. What could be better? Well, I'll tell you what could be better. Couples counseling with Dr. Allen. Mm-hmm. She does that too. Dr. Allen, what have you been up to this beautiful week?
I have been studying science magazines about what I do, relationships and chemistry, and I just got one, and it says, After the War.
Oh, that sounds very interesting. And
you're not kidding.
Which war are we talking about?
We're talking about the one that is bubbling.
Yeah, yeah, that is a bubbling like primordial ooze right now.
True.
Yeah.
I'm a transactional analyst. Eric Byrne took Sigmund Freud and made him simpler, and I teach communication. And that's what the problem is today, communication. There's only three ways to communicate. One is to intimidate with fear. One is to seduce with guilt and shame for who you are or what you do. And the third one is to teach people how to negotiate so that it's a win-win situation, lovingly. So that's what we're doing here. As soon as we get started with our clients.
Yeah, let me check what's going on with our switchboard. See if we've got some calls coming in. Until then, I have had some people reach out regarding, you know, internet dating and Zoom dating. And they're wondering if that's a good thing. And you know, I said, you need to listen to the show. Dr. Allen has gone over this, and she's got some really great things to say about it. So do you want to talk a little bit about that, Dr. Allen?
The changes that we've got in our country due to this virus is causing us to require that we build our loving relationships on friendship instead of sex.
Right.
Because friendship is the foundation of making love. Sex, animals can do sex, But making love is a combination of physicality, mental, and feelings or emotions. And I'm going to say what I love to say, an Upanishad from ancient India. Beware of your thoughts, for they become words. Beware of the words, they become habits. Beware of your habits, they become your character.
Oh, yeah.
Beware of your character, it becomes your destiny. At the bank making money, the doctor's office being healthy, and in every relationship, loving relationships. I am a marriage, family, child therapist. I'm also an addiction specialist in alcoholism and sexual addiction, which invariably go together. So if you have a situation you want to ask me, give us a call.
Well, we have lots of questions from our Facebook family, and I want to thank all of our followers on Facebook and Twitter who send us some really great questions. And let's take one of those questions right now. Gay man, 45 years old, been in a long-term relationship for 7 years, but I feel the fire is going out and it's smoldering and ashes. I don't want to let go of this relationship. I'd like to rekindle that flame, but I'm not certain I know how anymore. I feel like I'm not the same one person I was when I got into this relationship 7 years ago. That's kind of like talk about, isn't it, Dr. Allen?
If you have not negotiated.
They talk about the 7 year itch, but you talk about the 3.5 year cycle.
Well, a relationship starts when you come together, or it starts when you Zoom. It is the beginning of communication, physically, mentally, and emotionally. And as you're well aware, today we have to be especially careful of the physical proximity because we are in the process of handling an epidemic, only it's a pandemic thing, and we've got to take care of ourselves to take care of each other. Mm-hmm. So the first 3 months of connecting, whether it's on social media or whether it's on texting or whether it's on sharing Zoom groups, is when you've got to find out the moral, ethical, and legal structure of each other, because that's the foundation of making love. You have to be compatible. What?
Oh, yeah, I agree.
So the first connection may be physical, may be mental, may be emotional. It depends on what media you're using. And today, there's new forms, Zoom magazines, Zoom connections, which basically allow you to communicate on social media, either superficially or significantly.
Exactly.
Did I hear somebody's voice?
Yes, you did. We have a live caller. Do you want to take a call, Dr. Allen?
I want to take a call so that I can apply the information I'm educating on.
Perfect. Caller, you are live with Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
Yes.
What is it?
As a business, as a person, how am I able to net or transact with a male while trying to respect him?
You want a man to respect? Do you look at bio? What?
Yes, I work on Instagram, and a lot of times they will try to flirt with me, but I want to do business with them first. Is it disrespectful to ask for a business transaction?
Well, if you're going to be, do you want to be respected by this man or cherished?
Cherished.
If you want to be cherished, you can't treat him like your student, like your client, like your child. That might be very cherishing for a man who wants to be cherished, but a man who wants to be respected would not like interviewing him. He would rather interview you.
Thank you so much. I knew that is exactly what you would say, and I just wanted to call in your voice and just get a quick answer from you.
Okay. So are you going to be receptive, available, and respecting of somebody that reaches out to you either over the social media or through, you know, whatever form of, how do you hunt for your men?
I would rather do it in person, but during this time, it affects.
Exactly right. That's what I'm referring to. How do you hunt for men? Do you belong to social media communication systems that are safe and you get to see their faces and you hear their voices?
Yes.
Pardon?
Yes, ma'am.
And so do you present yourself in those ways?
Yes. But I also present my business, and I want men and people that would support me.
Support you in what way?
Support me in buying my products.
Oh, I see. You want to be with somebody to make money. See, there's two motives behind many romantic relationships. One is to get paid, and the other one is to get laid.
Right.
And you want to be paid.
Which is that feminine?
If you're wanting to get paid and you're meeting a man who wants to pay you.
Right.
That is generally a relationship in which you are the respectable one and he is the cherishable one. Or you might call him a sugar daddy.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
So do you want to be respected for selling your products? Because I am generally I'm a marriage, family, child, therapist. I am not a business therapist, but there are coaches, there are mentors for that. So
yeah.
I probably would not fit the bill for getting mated. Do you want to get mated or married?
Married.
Okay. Have you kept your body in shape?
Yes, ma'am.
Because when Harvard did the study and interviewed men and women on their reasons for marrying or mating, mating is undocumented marriage. Marriage is documented mating. I have no problem with either one as long as both of you like it. Do you see?
Okay.
So with that in mind, men or people that want to be respected generally pick with their eyes because they want to be respected for their ability to take care of their husbands, wives, kids, families. And the person they're taking care of is rewarded by them for respecting what they do.
Okay.
Therefore, that's how you get cherished. But if you want simply, there are some old ancient businesses called prostitution where women or men sold their bodies for money. Are you speaking in those terms? You
no.
don't want to get paid for having sex, or do you? If you
no.
want to marry, pardon?
I sell products.
You've had what?
I sell health and wellness products.
I didn't hear that sentence.
I want to sell my body, no ma'am.
Pardon me?
I was listening to what you were
Kelly.
She said she doesn't want to sell her body, Dr. Allen. She sells health and beauty products.
Oh, I see. So she's wanting a business coach.
Well, I do like how you talk about like the aspect of, you know, one getting laid and one getting paid. And I found it useful in my business life. And so I just wanted to ask that question. I do find so much of your work like so useful in different aspects of life. And one of those is
I understand that.
Just relationships.
But you have to have a primary goal because your goal will be found out because men generally interview like, have you been married? Do you want to be married?
They
will interview you, and if you fit their design, they will then consider you as an applicant for marriage or mating. You said you don't want to marry?
I do want to marry.
Oh, you do want to marry, and you've kept your body in shape because when Harvard did the study, they found they asked men, why did you mate? Why did you marry? And they said, because I wanted to stabilize my sensuous home life. They wanted a family and a home and a good sexual partner, because sex is quite important to men. Women, on the other hand, wanted status, Mrs. So-and-so, and financial stability, which is what I thought you wanted in a relationship called marriage or mating.
Yes, ma'am, I do.
But is that your primary goal, or is selling cosmetics your primary goal? It's fine.
I know. But I just have to make money somehow. And I found that business ownership is a way to be receptive to a man that may want you at different times of the day while still being trying to be feminine. So that's why I run a business.
No, here's the problem. When you want respect and cherishing equally,
okay.
you're
right.
narcissistic.
Okay, okay.
And narcissism means you're a 10 and they have to be a 0.
Okay.
So here's the answer to your question. I think having a coach help you be a good businesswoman would be wonderful.
Okay.
But if you want to marry, a marriage, family, child therapist might guide you to appeal to a man who wants a family or a home and a wife that loves him as a human, then maybe they can set up a business together.
Oh. Can I ask one more question?
Yes.
What is the duty dating like way to go? What's the process when hunting for men? Is it
duty dating is what you do? Do you flirt? Do you hunt for men by flirting? Do you look in the eyes and smile?
I'm pretty shy.
But shyness is going to require that you ask them out.
Right. I know. It's sad.
Because, and then the problem with that is you're more comfortable with feminine men, but they do not make as much money as masculine men.
Exactly.
So do you want to be the man in a relationship? Because now you're sounding like you want to be the man.
No, I don't.
Then will you go 3 days a week for 5 minutes a day and look in the eyes of men you're attracted to and smile, but don't talk first?
Okay, I will.
Have I convinced you?
3 days is doable. Yes.
Okay.
3 days.
Then have
Thank
we
you,
answered
Pat.
Your question? What?
Thank you, Dr. Pat.
Thank you for calling. Bye.
Bye, caller. Thank you. Okay.
Well, we went around the circle, but we still ended up in the same place.
Well, yeah, but I think it kind of clarified if you are, I mean, one of the things I think people misunderstand is the respect and cherishing thing. I don't think people get it. When you respect a man, he's cherished. When you cherish a man, and that's one of the things, I mean, of course, everybody wants to be cherished and respected, but it's which one first. And I think sometimes that gets lost, you know, and it is hard to transition from, you know, business to, you know, person. And a couple of the girls that I've coached, they were executives and they had a really hard time. So I used to make them ritualistically take off their work jacket, you know, and say, and they're put their briefcase and lock it in the trunk of their car and say,
and
now
that's duty dating.
Exactly.
5 days a day, 5 days, 3 days a week, you go out there and flirt with men. You smile at men that are attractive to you, but you haven't investigated. You're not friends. They haven't interviewed you. That's duty dating. Duty dating, when I was a girl, they had a thing called the cotillion, which was young people dancing for social connection.
Yeah.
You see?
I think that those days are, those, I think that's a beautiful and lost art.
Yes,
so,
it is.
We
but
have a light
what's
color.
Nice?
What's that?
Social media requiring us to build friendship before we have intercourse.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds like we have a live caller, Dr. Allen. Caller, you're live on the air with Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. I first and foremost wanted to say thank you so much to Dr. Allen because she's... thank you, Dr. Allen. You've been such a help for so many relationships. in my life.
Thank you for saying so.
Yes, yes. It helped tremendously in the romantic relationship and familial relationship. So I'm coming back with a question now. I'm in the position where I'm sort of taking care of my niece. My sister passed away and her father works. And so every chance I get, my husband and I are taking care of my 11-year-old niece. And she is in a bad place. And I don't know how to help her. And I'm wondering if you have any suggestions.
And so what can I do to help you?
I'm wondering if there are any tools to use, like with an 11-year-old girl who is super depressed. She's with everybody doing the online school thing, and she's not responding to anything. Like I partially don't know. I just don't know how to help, and I am wondering for any tools that you have.
Is she doing anything that is dangerous?
I guess I don't know. She spends a really significant amount, like probably 15 hours a day online and communicating, I think mostly with safe people, but I don't, that's the place that might be dangerous. And then, so she doesn't, she just sort of eats junk food, stays in bed, and doesn't get up or out for much. So I don't know the line. I mean, it's nothing like, I know she's doing drugs or something like that, but.
So you're not aware of any immoral, unethical, or illegal things at this time, okay. Right?
Right. All right. Already helping. Thank you for the perspective. Yes, that's true. I'm not.
How did she lose her mother?
Okay.
Yeah. She was adopted. She originally came from overseas. So it's like she's lost her mom twice at this point.
And you're living with her.
Well, not full time. I'm living near her and taking care of her, but her father is her primary guardian.
And is he living with her?
He's living with her, and he's nothing reportable, but borderline reportable negligent.
Okay. So she's not going to any virtual school or any tutoring or any home education?
Right. Like, I will go over and get her on, and she'll just fall asleep in front of the computer or turn it off and go back to bed.
Okay. So you're doing the best you can.
Yes. Yeah. But I feel like I'm failing miserably.
Well, it sounds like you're doing the best you can.
Okay. Thanks, I guess. Yeah, and it's
the
it
fact that you're attending to her is powerful.
Okay. Yeah, I'm definitely, I just don't know whether I'm helping or hurting, so that helps to know, because I sometimes wonder if it's making it worse, but it's, if I weren't trying so hard, that maybe she would try harder. I don't know.
I can give you one book that I think might comfort you, and it's by Dan Siegel, S-E-I-G-E-L. It's called Brainstorms.
Brainstorms. Okay. Writing that down.
And I'll
Thank
tell
you
what it is. I usually mention it every meeting. we find that between 13, she's 11, right?
Yes.
When they get to be 11, 12, and especially 13, up to 18 years old, they don't manufacture dopamine naturally in their body. Dopamine is an upper.
Okay.
It makes you feel good. But right now, feelings don't feel very good because of the virus and because of the change in the lifestyle, school, contact, whatever. So I want you to be comforted by the fact that this book talks about the natural state of young people is a bit teenage anxious.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds comforting.
That might comfort you in that there is a normal phase at this time coming up for her, which is not very pleasant. It's called teenage years.
My husband's here with me asking if that's why a lot of teenagers get into drugs.
And that's part of this problem. So Brainstorms by Dan Siegel is what I recommend. And you paying attention to her safety and reporting it to somebody in the government, if you see something immoral, unethical, or illegal. But this is not a very good time to be 11 years old.
No, I know. I feel so badly for her because it is not.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
yes,
what I want you to know is I commend you for doing this, and I want you to know some of it is natural.
Thank you.
Okay.
And I would not be here doing this without all your prior help. So I'm super eternally grateful. And
good.
And happy belated birthday. I believe you just had a birthday, right?
Yes, I did. 86. But
congratulations.
That's nature
too.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Thank you so very much.
Thank you on behalf of this girl. Thank you on behalf of this girl.
Yes. And it's all your training has gotten me this far. So
now I can do something else for you right now. I can teach you how to communicate with her. Have you listened to me enough to know my 5 tools?
Yes.
Okay.
But I'm
then you be sure you remember to ask her how she feels and how you can help you and she feel better.
Okay. And when I guess that's actually, that reminds me of another question that I was wondering. Even
what?
When I'm trying to help her get work done or things like that, if I'm trying to motivate her to school, I'm saying, like, how can I help you feel better about doing your schoolwork? How can I help you feel better about going to your class?
And she may tell you, I want to watch this program before I do it.
If you
can help her feel better by negotiating a treat, do it.
Okay. And if she tells me that it doesn't feel good, she doesn't want to do it, and she just wants to lay in bed, and
then this is what you say to her. You have every right not to do what you're supposed to do in an education. But that means that I have to take away something for you to earn the privilege of using your cell phone, your computer.
Okay, that's good. Yes, I've been saying something similar and taking her cell phone, The problem is her father's not, he doesn't reinforce any of that. So it feels pretty meaningless. Like I'm just the one, I'm the only one doing that. And so then it's sort of, I just turn into the jerk.
Negotiate with her.
Okay. That's really helpful. Yes.
And tell her, I want you to be as educated as I can help you because I love you.
Yes.
So if you choose not to help me love you, I am definitely not going to help you not love me by taking away your cell phone.
Okay. Yes, and she doesn't like it when I tell her I love her or I'm doing these things because I care about her and I care about her, you know, development or things like that. If I say I love her, she gets really mad and she tells me she doesn't want to hear that.
Well, it may be that she has an emotional PTSD problem with her mother's death.
Okay.
That causes her to be a norepinephrine sensitive person, which is a negative. Do you see what I mean?
Yes. And
what you tell her is that you are here to help her live well, not to stay unhappy. Okay.
Yes, that's wonderful.
So negotiate.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Pat.
Good luck.
Take care. Bye. It is a rugged time for kids right now. And
you're not kidding.
They're really going through a thing. And I'm getting a lot of young mothers talking to me and saying, you know, my kids aren't motivated. They're not allowed to do this. They're not allowed to do that. And I think it is setting up almost like a PTSD thing. I mean, it's hard enough for us as adults, a grown-up adult that have been around for a long time to figure out like what's happening. But imagine being a child. And I think that they're really going through a thing.
It is. I wonder, is Robert Storr listening to this show?
If he is, it would be awesome. If he called us, we would love to hear from Robert right now.
Please call us. Robert, we need you. Robert Storr is a former intern of mine at the Wann Institute. When he was studying to be a marriage, family, child therapist, but he got into a certain phase of therapy that was suicide prevention. And he is the director of the Young PTSD Soldiers. And this lady, darling lady, calling with her 11-year-old motherless child in her life, and she's concerned about it. I would love it if Robert Storr would call us and talk about suicide prevention.
I would love that too. I think it's especially poignant right now with everything that's going on in the world. People are having a really hard time. And I know Robert does specialize with soldiers with PTSD, but I think it relates across the board. We're all really right now, like you were mentioning earlier, in a certain type of war. And so there's a lot of trauma with everything that's happening. And, you know, somebody was talking about the pandemic of 1918. And I said, you know, there's a massive difference. In that day and age, there wasn't social media, there wasn't a news programs, it wasn't instantaneous information spreading like wildfire. I mean, you had your community areas, you knew what was happening within your own community. It wasn't like you were really understanding what was going on with the world. So
I know
that's a thing. We have a caller. Caller live with Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
Yes, I sure do.
Awesome.
What is your question?
Dr. Pat, what is the name of the magazine that the scientific magazine that's printing your article this month in October?
Is printing what?
Your article.
Oh, the one, what was the subject? I have to go in the other room and get the article. What is the subject? Language?
I think it's language. You had mentioned a few months ago that you were being published this month.
No, I'm not being published. I'm saying that my doctoral work, Androgynous Semantic Realignment, has not been scientifically documented until now. But it wasn't about me. It was about the subject of communication. I'm going to go get the magazine right now in the other room because I work out of my home. Okay?
Okay.
Here we go. Here I am. It's on this. Here we are. It's the October 4th edition of Science. That's the name of the magazine, Science, excuse me. And the subtitle is Language and the Brain. Now,
okay.
Here is the article that scientifically backs my work, but it doesn't talk about me. I'm an unknown. You understand?
Okay.
So here's the name of the article. It's on page 62 of this magazine, and it's called Neural, that's brain, The Neural Basis of Combinatory Syntax and Semantics. Now, I'll bet that doesn't mean a thing to you, does it?
Not much.
Okay. I am going to take the time right now to give you the core elements, because you were darling enough to call me about it, the core evidence that substantiates my PhD dissertation, which is Androgynous Semantic Realignment. Now, that doesn't mean anything to you either, does it?
Well, I follow you, so I'm very interested.
Okay, then here's what we go. In the article, they give two sentences which demonstrate the difference between syntax and combinatory. Combinatory is putting two things together. They're putting together semantics and syntax. Now, here's the example. Sally baked the black beans. Take a guess. Is that semantics or syntax? Just take a guess.
Sure. It's syntax.
You're not correct. I'll give you the example. I'll give you the example for syntax. Sally baked the beans black. What's the difference?
Well, in one, the subject comes first and the adjective comes second.
That's right. Sally baked the black beans is semantics. Do you know my book, Getting to I Do?
I do.
Do you know that in Germany, when they did the copies for it, my book is published in six cultures. In Germany, they could not say getting to I do. They couldn't say it. No way. Every word in the book is identical to getting to I do, except the title of the book. Now listen to the title. No Man for One Night.
Okay.
No Man for One Night is either syntax or semantics. Which is it?
I'm going to say it does have context to it. So which of those
does
choices...
it have any adjectives at all?
Yes.
What?
One.
No one man night. For one night. Wait, one is a number. That's not an adjective.
Oh, I thought it described night. Okay.
No, it didn't describe for one night. It is describing a piece of time.
Okay.
A rainy night has an adjective.
Okay.
It rained that night.
No adjective there.
No adjectives. Syntax is the quality of the object. Semantics is the noun. Now let's read the title of the article again. The neural, that's brain, right lobe, left lobe, basis of combinatory syntax. See, my title was androgynous because I combine yin and yang. Men have yang bodies and yin souls. Women have yin bodies and yang souls. There are four entities in every relationship. So neural basis of combinatory syntax and semantics is their way of saying androgynous. Syntax.
Maybe you should let them know.
What?
Maybe you should let them know. I mean, your take on it is fascinating. The word androgynous. Is their word cognitory? I'm not sure I'm not catching that word correctly.
Cognitory syntax is the adjective. Semantics are the nouns.
Well, did you read the article?
Anybody that wants to know the scientific foundation of what I do.
Fantastic, Dr. Allen. I will look it up and read it.
I want you to do that, and I want you to remember the following scientific piece of data. The first 3 years of a baby's life is implicit languaging. Do you know what that means?
It's not direct. It's just picked up intuitively.
That's right. Oh, you smart girl. Implicit is tones of voice, gestures, postures, feelings. Now, from 3 on, language is explicit. Now, don't you talk to me that way, young man. semantics are directions. So it's so interesting when I go to therapists' lectures, the biggest one in Anaheim, they never talk about the difference between implicit languaging and explicit languaging. That's the combination of the adjectives of syntax and the nouns of semantics. Did you hear that?
I did. I'm taking
notes.
Now
I'm going to read those statements again. Sally baked the black beans. Are there any adjectives in there?
Yes.
What?
Black.
No, black is a noun.
Oh. So the color of the bean?
Watch it again.
Okay.
Watch it again.
Okay.
I'm rewarding you for knowing the difference between implicit and explicit, because that's exquisitely important. Now listen to Sally again. Sally baked the beans black.
Black.
Can you hear the adjective in black?
Yes, because it's a descriptive. It's very specific.
Do you see that? Do you know that article and whole magazine is devoted to my androgynous, now I'm going to rechange the title of my doctoral, androgynous semantic hyphenated syntax. You see, I'm going to put two words into one word. Realignment. Androgynous semantic hyphenated syntax realignment. I use the quantum mechanics of words to impact the quantum physics of energy. And the energy is intimidation, guilt or seduction, and love.
Wow.
Isn't that important?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
do you know that I am knighted?
No.
Do you know that?
You mean by the Queen of England?
No.
Okay.
By the Pope, because I belong to the original cultural group of knights.
Mm-hmm.
During the wars in England, France, and America. In 2013, somebody heard my work and they thought it was significantly impacting for human beings to be impacted by it. That's what this show is all about. It goes over the world, and what I'm doing is I'm teaching how to not intimidate, not seduce with guilt and shame, but to negotiate with love. That's my goal in life. Do you know that Einstein did not have the scientific foundation of a laboratory for his work, MC squared, until he was old? And he was so surprised at his own brilliance that he actually said, my goodness. And that's what I've done this October of 2019. The whole
2020.
Life. What?
2020 or 2019?
19. October 4th, 2019. It's pink. It's language and the brain.
Okay.
Thank you for being smart enough to be my student so I could do my best to demonstrate the combination of semantics and syntax in language.
Dr. Pat, where can we write to you and send you fan mail?
Where can you write to me and send me fan mail?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to tell you. I'm living with my fourth oldest daughter in Carlsbad, California. It's my semi-retirement. And I think I'm maybe afraid to give out the address.
Info.
Do you have a
info at drpetallen.com. You can send that email and you can find out where there's a physical address to send a letter or gift or package or what have you.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And I want one more question for Kelly. Kelly,
mm-hmm.
When you get a chance, perhaps, I was listening to the show today and you mentioned see Dr. Pat Allen on Facebook and Twitter.
Yes.
And I see her Facebook page, Dr. Pat yep. Allen. But on Twitter, there's four Dr. Pat Allen. No judgment yep. about that. But with her picture, with Dr. Pat Allen's actual pictures, and I'm not sure which of these is the correct Twitter, because I'd like to tweet out her some of her quotes and her education and her teaching. I actually work in communication, so I'm very interested in language.
Yeah.
But I just can't tell.
Yeah.
So maybe on one of the shows, you could tell us, you know, not today, but just, you know, firm up for us or clarify which of those is the correct, you know, the real Dr. Pat Allen, will she stand up? Sort of on Twitter.
All right.
So,
yeah, I will definitely look into that for you and determine that. And speaking of communications and such, if anybody's interested, and I know you are, you can go to www.drpetallen.com. And we have a free video up there right now, and also sign up for the newsletter and you'll get all kinds of information that
There you go.
That you may
wonderful.
Not
Thank you, Kelly. Thank you so much, Dr. Pat.
You are
so
very welcome.
And thank you so much for being smart enough to track this statement.
Well,
and
I'm thrilled.
Please enjoy Science Magazine.
I will. Thank you so much for educating us.
You're
Take
welcome.
Care. Bye bye.
Will do. Bye bye. Hello, Kelly.
Hi, I have a surprise. I actually
what?
Got a communication with Robert Storr, and I am going to see if I can get our switchboard to connect us up with him. He called during our last call. So I'm just checking with that right now, make sure we can get him on here. And that would be so awesome. Oh, I just got it. He just told me he is calling him right now. Super, super excited. Robert Storr, are you there?
I am here. Thank you for having me on this evening. How you doing?
Oh, awesome. We're so glad you're here with us. You know, we were talking earlier tonight about people that are just in real trauma with this pandemic and everything that's happening. So Dr. Allen, reached out via the air and wanted to know if you were listening. So while she was on the other line, I reached out to you. I'm so glad you called in, Dr. Allen. Dr. Hubbard's store.
So, Robert.
Good evening, Dr. Allen. How are you?
I'm just fine, and I want you to describe how you became the director of the PTSD for Soldiers. Would you please let people know that people like you are working to help people not kill themselves?
Yeah, thank you so much. So, as you know, I am the survivor of a suicide loss, and having lost someone very important in my life, it changed my career direction. I've been a psychotherapist for over 25 years, and of course, I had the privilege, the pleasure, and the opportunity to work with you for many, many of those years and to retain a relationship with you. Your work has been the foundation of what has not only changed my life, but countless people's lives. And when I took off from where I was working in a home health clinic to work clinically in the area of suicide prevention, I ended up becoming director of the second largest suicide prevention center in the United States, which covers an area of 11 million people here in Los Angeles. And I learned everything I wanted to know or needed to know, both from a therapeutic and a personal standpoint, not only of suicide and the elements about mental health conditions that contribute to suicide, but also about the individuals who suffer by losing someone important in their lives, which are about 40% of us in the population worldwide that actually survive a suicide loss. And it is then an extended period of grief and loss that individuals who survive go through. So I work on both ends. Currently, I work with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention on their board of directors locally here in Los Angeles, but I work to prevent it, not only in civilians, but in the military, because military members die at twice the rate of civilians, over 20 per 100,000 per day versus about 10 per 100,000. But any loss is tremendous, and they make up almost a fifth of the suicide losses annually. And it's partially because of the trauma they've survived. It's partially because of the transitions they've gone through. But what people didn't know about until the 60s was that suicide is preventable, that we need to work to destigmatize it, to talk about it, to make people around us comfortable talking about it, and to know, most importantly, it's treatable, that 95% of the time, individuals who called into the Suicide Prevention Center that shared wishes or thoughts of wanting to die by suicide were taken care of in a couple of hours. They were de-escalated and provided opportunity to get treatment. But it wasn't until the 60s when a couple of veterans right here in Los Angeles actually did some work and found out that people who die by suicide are ambivalent. They're fighting with the pain of trying to live through a trauma and the desire to escape it. And if we work with them to reduce the trauma and remind them and support them in the ways to connect, especially now during the pandemic, we have the opportunity to save countless lives. How's that for a little bit about what I'm doing?
And are you in business for your own? Are you in private practice? How can non-military people get to you?
Yeah, no, thank you so much for that opportunity to share. Yes, I am the executive director of a nonprofit for veterans, but I do maintain a private practice. And today, of course, it's easier to reach across most anywhere that people want the help. And the help can be with anything from dealing with their own depression or disconnection or trauma related to what we're all experiencing now with COVID-19, or if something happened in their past, or if they've survived a suicide or they're worried about somebody, they can always call me at area code 562-810-1040. That's 562 area code 810-1040. Or they can feel free to email me at our store, R, which is for Robert, and my last name, store, S-T-O-H-R. So it's R-S-T-O-H-R 2015@gmail.com. So either one of those, I'd be more than happy to talk with people, to book a session if they so desire, to answer concerns or questions they may have about somebody they're concerned about, whether it's military or not, that may be suffering from a condition, especially someone if they have anybody in their surroundings, children, adults, adolescents that have survived a previous suicide attempt. That is one of the markers we want to make sure that we address to make sure they never go back and attempt again, because not everybody who has attempted will, but it is one of the risk factors that we look out for people that may be at risk for dying by suicide.
What statement or question do you hear most significantly with and from suicide impacted human beings?
Thank you for asking that question. So people who have survived someone who's died by suicide, and again, the statistics are staggering. It's a good 40% of the population. It's actually closer to 50 or 60, but for 40% of us, we have survived usually someone we knew well, we were acquainted with, a family member, a spouse, a child. So it is a tremendous trauma, of course, to lose anybody, but to lose someone to suicide in a situation you don't understand, did not expect, is a significant trauma. And what happens is if you experience trauma and grief together, you go through what we call complicated grief, which is a series of pretty significant symptoms that could lead to a major depression, could lead to anxiety, sleeplessness, difficulty eating, difficulty maintaining and concentrating and doing your daily tasks. So if you have been impacted, the first thing I share with people is, please understand you're not going crazy, although it feels like it. But please understand you are experiencing a significant grief process that is much different from normal grief. Grief in and of itself is difficult, and many of us go through it on multiple levels with losses. But when you combine grief and a traumatic death by an accident or a suicide or a sudden loss, it becomes a trauma and grief. It's significantly more difficult to get through, and you need to really, really pay attention to and get assistance in learning to kind of understand what that is and to process that. And there are a number of ways to do it with an individual therapist. I would be one. You can also do it through free groups. And you can also check out the website, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, at AFSP.org. That's AFSP.org. They have resources across the country where you can avail yourself of free groups or therapists. The group that I do here for free in the Los Angeles area on Saturdays is listed. And of course, currently with the virus, all of our groups are done remotely, as are all our sessions. And coming up in November, the 21st, the Saturday before Thanksgiving, it's International Suicide Survivors of a Suicide Loss Day, and AFSP will sponsor groups around the world on that particular day. So you can also check out AFSP.org, and you look for survivor resources if you are a survivor of a suicide loss. And I strongly encourage you, having gone through the experience both personally and working with people professionally, I understand the significance it can really lead to a disability related to your mental health condition. But if worked through, it can provide you an opportunity to really get a better, stronger, more significant lease on your life.
Are you available to give lectures to professionals?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I do prevention and early intervention training as a volunteer. So it is for free if it's through the AFSP organization. I've also worked with their medical director, Dr. Christine Moutier, on a clinical training for professionals that are really trying to understand the great difficulty in this field right now is we have a number of wonderfully qualified professionals who don't have the information I have or that AFSP has on how to treat and work with people who are suicidal. And unfortunately, people who are feeling suicidal will not reach out for help for fear that their rights will be taken away. So I train professionals how to assess the risk, de-escalate it, and work with people in ongoing treatment to reduce it. And it is very treatable if given the right treatment. I co-authored a manual on working with attempt survivors But I'm also available, you know, to work with loss survivors as well.
Robert, I am so grateful you're in my life. And thank you so much on behalf of the people that have had this experience with you. I pray and hope that anybody who needs you listens to this podcast, which is permanent, and reaches out to you, because you're a gift from God.
I agree definitely with that. Robert, one thing you didn't touch on, and as a two-time survivor, I lost my nephew and my very best friend from kindergarten. I lost both of them, and I felt a level of guilt for not recognizing, even though I wasn't a professional, I felt a level of guilt for not recognizing that both of them were suicidal. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, no, thank you for bringing that up, Kelly. That's such an important point, and it's something I try to include in all my conversations and training. And thank you, Dr. Allen, for that wonderful endorsement and support. I really feel blessed and privileged to have you in my life, and you have changed my life as you have for countless others, and I am living testament about the things you can accomplish when given the appropriate support, which you've provided throughout the years. So I lost my partner, it's going on 11 years ago. He left the relationship abruptly, and about a year later took his life, and I was in touch with him on a daily basis, connected, talking, sharing, listening, supporting him, and I knew he was struggling. I knew he had a previous history of attempt. What I didn't know at the time, which I want all survivors to know, is we cannot always save someone's life. So therefore, even with the information, you are not responsible for that. However, if you are someone who has lost someone and you do feel guilt, please know that that is a natural process we all go through, because there's a reckoning in our psyche where we try to settle, come to closure in a tragic situation like this, where we really, it's almost impossible to come to closure. So we try to look at what could I have done? What should I have done? How did I not know? What would I do differently? And that's hindsight, which of course provides us an opportunity to really look back and understand things on a different level. But when you're experiencing, dealing with or supporting or loving someone who's struggling with a mental health condition, and you aren't aware, which you cannot possibly be aware unless they somehow share it. And even then, if they share it, you can't always prevent it, because we don't, one, have that capability, and two, not necessarily our responsibility. Of course, if someone's in crisis, we should always give them the suicide prevention lifeline or call it ourselves, which is 800-273-8255. That's 800-273-8255. But if you are a survivor now and you're listening, please, please, please give yourself a break and understand that you weren't, nor could you have ever been responsible. And I'm living testament to someone with a mental health license who lost a very dear person in my life, obviously. In hindsight, I could go back and do what we call a psychological autopsy, which is to really understand what was leading up to this person's death or their attempt to die and then their death eventually by suicide. But even then, I did my best over the next 4 years to learn everything I could learn. I lecture on it. I work with veterans. I work with lost survivors. And I still know that every time I work with a survivor, you will always feel a sense of guilt or remorse of somehow what could I have done differently. And the reality is that there isn't anything, because you would have. Most of us would have walked across hot coals with bare feet to save the loved ones that we lost. So we know intuitively the ache, the grief, the unresolved feelings of sadness and loss, that we're seeking to cope with those by trying to find a reason, and we're trying to find a reason that's associated with us. So please, do not do that to yourself. Please accept the fact that you did do the best you could, that there is nothing we could have done differently. that what you can do now is become a living testament to how somebody does recover from it by doing the work and becoming the person that you were intent to be. Because the interesting paradox of life is through the pain that it creates or that is caused, it creates the opportunity for us to find the connection to the authentic self, to who we really are. And that spiritually, as Dr. Allen knows and myself, is when you connect to who you are, and you too, Kelly, you know you make a difference, and you both are making a substantial difference every day as a result of your ability to transcend the pain and reach out and help other people. So thank you both for that.
Well, I was really lucky and I was blessed because right after I lost my best friend, you were on our show in studio. That was several years ago, and you talked with me. It made such an amazing impact and difference because I was really feeling guilty because, I mean, my best friend since kindergarten, we talked every day and had plans for dinner, and he had just read the paper that I had written on self-harm and suicide, and he wept when he read it. And again, I felt many times, and like you said, it's sort of an autopsy of sorts, where I thought, I should have known, I should have seen, I should have figured it out, I should have recognized. But yeah, he never reached out to me and said anything like, you know, I'm feeling this way. He just would laugh and joke, and you would have never known anything was wrong until just he was supposed to have dinner with me and he never showed up, which was incredibly unusual. I went looking for him, and that's what I found. So, yeah, but if I hadn't have had contact with you shortly after that, I think I would have spiraled and struggled a lot more than I did with the guilt.
I want to interject. Yeah, no. I want to say something now. One of my tools is the following. I sense by the look of your face, your tone of your voice, your body language, it's the tool that flushes the implicit to the explicit language. So if I could give anybody a direction from my doctoral work of androgynous semantic realignment, for men, if your intuition tells you there's suicidal going on, say, I sense, I think, I believe by this sign, your tone of voice, your body language, your gesture, that you're feeling really sad or upset, maybe even suicide. Am I right? No.
That's the perfect prescription, Dr. Allen. That is the perfect prescription. You just named it right there, and all the training I do, that is the secret right there, exactly what you said. You have to know that with your intuition, if it's going off, you may be the only one that is spotting something, and if you have the courage to do exactly what you said.
For men, men run their lives. They have 21 genes attached to their sperm cells that enhance intuition. So you men out there, when your intuition tells you somebody is going suicidal, please, I sense, I think, I believe by this tone, gesture, posture, facial expression, that you're getting really upset, maybe even suicidal. Am I right? Yes or no? If you don't get a yes or a no, say, you have every right not to say yes or no, but that means you are upset. What can I do to help you feel better now? That's my gift to this lecture.
And so, Dr. Allen, that's for men. How about for women?
For women, it's I sense, I think, I believe by the tone of your voice, the look on your face, your body language and your gesturing that you're upset about something so fearsomely that I'm afraid you're going suicidal. Am I right? Are you getting desperately depressed? Yes or no? Yes, I am. What can I do to help you and I feel better? But here's the difference. Women have to follow their non-logical feelings, their instincts. Women are run by their neurotransmitters. Dopamine, that's when we're happy. Serotonin, that's when we're anxious. And norepinephrine, that's when we're very, very upset. Women have to feel good to do good. Check their feelings. Men have to do good to feel good. Check how they intuitively are doing. Period. Robert? Are you there, Robert? Kelly?
Yeah, I'm here. Robert, are you there?
I am. I'm here. Thank you. Yes, I put it on mute. But yes, I'm here now. Thank you.
I want you to know how much I appreciated your brilliant, spiritually sound, sensitive statement that you made. I know you saved somebody's life. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Allen and Kelly, for the work you do and for having me on tonight. It is always my pleasure, and I'll look forward to joining you again. Keep up the spiritual warfare.
We'd really like to have you on. We know November's an important month for suicide prevention. We know you may not be able to be on the day that is that special day that month, but we definitely would like you on in November.
Great. I will give you guys a holler or wait to hear from you the first Thursday of the month. And I thank you again for the opportunity and bless you for the amazing work that you're doing. And I appreciate you all being there. And of course you, Dr. Allen, for being in my life. And Kelly, wish you both the best this evening.
Thank you. One more time with the web address and the phone number.
Sure. So if you are concerned about somebody or concerned about getting services for yourself, look up the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention at www.afsp.org. If you are concerned about somebody, please know that the Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which operates throughout the United States at 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255. They can direct you to resources. They can answer questions. They can support you. If you're dealing with somebody who is in crisis or that you're afraid may be suicidal. Thank you both again for the lovely opportunity, and I look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Thank you, Robert.
Good.
Robert Storr, everybody.
Thank you.
Brilliant, brilliant. Robert, thank you so much. We're so glad you're here. Dr. Allen, I'm so excited that we could get Robert and that he talked to us. I get a lot of messages and a lot of questions. Right now. You can reach out to Dr. Allen if you need to talk. We do that phone appointment, but also I talk about suicide prevention hotline, which Robert gave to us, and I appreciate it. Caller, you're live on the air with Dr. Allen. Welcome to the show. Do you have a question?
Yes. Good evening, ladies.
Good.
I wanted to talk to you, Dr. Pat, about a man who's been dating me for about 2 months now, and who is 10 years younger than me. He's also Eastern European, so by your calculation, that would make him the same age as me, because we are supposed to automatically add 10 more years. But anyway, the reason I'm calling is to get your feedback on the fact that up until recently, he was married for 6 years to a woman 10 years younger than him. And I'm just calling to see if you have any thoughts on the fact that he goes from 10 years younger to 10 years older.
I personally do not believe how many times you go around the sun makes a bit of difference. I believe that each human being has a clock within that dictates how old they are, maturation-wise. So I maintain, if you have chemistry for someone, that chemistry is saying that nature knows that you, if you're a woman, are with a man whose chemistry is a little like your dad, but a little not like your dad. Therefore, you would not be inbreeding the species you are, human. So I believe that chemistry physically tells us what is right. There are old men and young girls. It doesn't matter unless you have some reason. For example, if you marry that old guy, I'm taking you out of my will, daughter. That is the price tag for something, age-wise. But I personally believe that if you are chemically attracted and they are of age, you can't be playing with people that are under 18. So moral, ethical, and legal are much more compatible determiners than age. There are some 80. You know, it's interesting how people lie on those profiles that they put out, because they know that people will absolutely categorize them by their age. Now, there are certain scientific things, yes. Everybody has a chronological age, and everybody has a maturation age, and everybody has a spiritual age of their ability to love. So that's what I think about aging.
Okay, and there's nothing you can read about the fact that he goes from a woman who's 10 years younger to a woman who's 10 years older?
Nothing except a learned lesson that women that are, Benjamin Franklin did a wonderful thing. I've got to advertise it. His son was getting married, and Benjamin Franklin wrote a letter to him on getting married. And he said in the letter, marry an older woman. Yes, what's above the waist may not be as perky as a young woman, but it's still in the same category. And what's below the waist is pretty much universal, depending on health or not health. And the women that are older appreciate a younger man who basically is interested in a physical, mental, and emotional relationship. So this young man was with a woman who was 10 years younger than he was, and they didn't make it because he literally wanted a woman who had more brains than body. And that's why I mentioned the Benjamin Franklin letter to his son.
All right. Okay, great. I wanted to know if there was something I needed to worry about there, but yeah, if you look at
honey,
it, he learned the
there's
lesson.
There's something to worry about when you want to be forming a relationship. The most important thing is compatibility, lifestyle, moral code, religious preference, political preference. My God. See, the problem today is people are jumping into sex before they're building a friendship. And a friendship does not care whether you've gone around the sun 20 times or 40 times, as long as you're chemically attractive, compatible in the major ways you live, and have a goal for building a loving spiritual relationship, period.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Pat. Yeah, thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you. Good.
I'll leave the floor to others. All right. Have a good night, ladies.
Thank you, caller.
Next question, Gabsor.
What the? We're getting some really super positive response to having Robert on. A lot of people reaching out and thanking us for having Robert. I want to thank Robert for being on here. And everybody is talking about using your tools to suss this out with respect to what's happening in the world today. I'm hoping our caller earlier, here's a question. Oh, okay. Yes. There we go. We got a special question coming in right now. I'm sending this because I do not want my boyfriend to hear me. I just wondered. My boyfriend has nose hair and eyebrows that need trimming. I would like to ask him to do that in a feminine way. Is there a great way to do that, Dr. Allen, with your tools?
Now, summarize, Kelly, summarize that question.
Okay, so
I changed ears one to the other.
No worries. We have a caller, or actually a question that came in. Then they want to know, is there a sensitive way to talk to your boyfriend when his nose hair and eyebrows are out of control?
Number one, you have to be in a committed relationship, boyfriend, girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see what I'm saying? Minimum.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're teaching him that he is to be cherished, not respected. First impressions count.
Yeah.
So if you want to teach, preach, bitch, moan, or question him on your first dates, I am sure that he will enjoy it if he is really feminine, not masculine. So think, do I want to be respected or do I want to be cherished by men? Because you've got to know that before you meet them.
Definitely.
Okay.
Well, it appears that these people are a couple, boyfriend and girlfriend.
They are.
Yes.
Therefore, I'm going to give the five tools of how to speak to a man who's a man. Number
awesome.
One, don't ask him how he feels. Ask him what he thinks. When you ask him what he feels, he better be puking or bleeding, because that's the only time I want you to check his feelings. Otherwise, what? Check his thinking, wanting. Second tool, you want to tell him about his eyebrows. You must make an appointment for the subject. Honey, I have some ideas about the way you handle your eyebrows and whatever. Are you willing to listen to my suggestions, yes or no? If he says no, that's it. If he says yes, ask him when it would be most convenient for him to take the time. Always ask for the appointment, what your subject is, and the convenient time. Third tool. If he does something irritating, but it's not immoral, unethical, or illegal, please say you have a right to say that, think that, feel that, do that, but I'm uncomfortable with it. But make him right for his right to do it. Fourth, 90% of all communication is nonverbal. Tones of voice, gestures, postures, facial expression. You've got to flush those. This is the one that I just taught. I sense, I think, I believe by the tone of your voice, the look on your face, your body language, your gesturing, that you're upset about something. Or, in this case, I sense by your tone of voice, thanks, whatever, when I gave you those directions without permission, you felt disrespected. Am I right? Yes. What can I do to help you feel, and I feel, better about my mistake? The fifth tool is nonverbal. It's timeout. You know the referee with the timeout hand signal? When you get a timeout hand signal, I hope he says, what are you doing? And you say, I'm signaling you because I'm afraid to tell you that I have an idea about your eyebrows. Are you willing to hear my idea? And when would it be convenient?
Awesome.
Got it?
Okay, so here's a question I have. So, well, this is what I did, because I was married to a man who had crazy ear hair and crazy eyebrows. And so I said to him one day, let's do a spa day. I'll do you, you do me. And he was like, oh, okay, that sounds fun. So I trimmed his ear hair and fixed his eyebrows, and he shaved my legs, and it was a spa day. It was very gently done. But then he said, I love the way I look. And I was like, awesome, we could do this once a month together. So I didn't.
You did, but you now, not? Did the, I hear you ask permission to do this?
Yeah. Can we do a spa day together? Wouldn't that be great?
I want you to know you did a joint tool together. But you should respect him. Men want respect. Men that are women want to be cherished, and I have no problem with that. Women who want to be respected have a right to do that, but they're only going to be attractive to men that are feminine.
Yeah, exactly.
One Fred Astaire and one Ginger Rogers.
But you know what was so great about it? When we were done with our spa day, he said, wow, I've never felt so good about myself. That was great. I felt so pampered. And I didn't even know I needed that feeling. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. So it worked out really well. And in this day and age of the pandemic, you're not really going to be able to send somebody for a spa treatment or to the barbershop or whatever. And maybe that's an alternative method of saying, hey, you know, let's, you know, we haven't been able to do this. Maybe we could do it together.
What you're doing is respecting the men in your life, and that's perfect.
Yeah, I've always tried to. Okay, so our listener is really excited, and she's thanking us, and they are engaged, by the way. So very exciting. We love that. We love to be able to reach out and give solutions.
Good.
So fun. I love it. Okay, so let me see. We have another question.
Did we cut off a lot of people?
No, actually, I think that tonight has just been a little bit on the slower side. We have a lot of listeners because my Ronan at the radio can see who's listening and what's going on, but we're having a shy day. However, what is so perfect is that we had Robert, and that's been a lot of the questions that have been coming in about depression. We do have a question about a four-year-old boy right now. This person says, I have a four-year-old son. I'm getting worried about how rebellious he is becoming, and he's sneaky. And he's also taken occasion to, apparently he drowned a kitten. So the caller
always, when you're when your intuition, if you're a man, and your instinct, if you're a woman, tells you that your child is in a bad way, get them to the best professional medical person you know.
Well, they're asking about therapy for a four-year-old. How does that work? Is there, because you're a family and child therapist. So how does therapy for somebody who's four?
Therapists for 4 years old. I did kids from three. As soon as they were explicitly able to use words, I used my work on three-year-olds. There's a test, the John C. Buck test of a tree, a house, and a family that will give a therapist information.
Well, that's very interesting. What's it called?
What?
Well, they're asking what the test is called?
Like a house, a tree, and a person. That particular drawing will be coming out of the child's subconscious, and it will tell a therapist like myself what's going on.
Oh, perfect. Okay, great. We have a caller on live, Dr. Allen. Caller, you're live with Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
Yes, hi. Thank you so much. Thank you, Pat. Thank you both. I just had a question.
Thank you for calling. What can I do for you?
Well, me and my boyfriend are engaged, but he wants to move in together, but he has two kids that are 17, and then I have one still at home that's 16. Now, just feeling a little nervous to live together, that we wouldn't really get along if we had all these kids with us. I just worry that it would kind of drive me crazy.
Could you possibly have a relationship in which you don't live together as a family until the kids are done?
Yeah, that's what I was suggesting, or I feel more comfortable with. He seems to want to live together sooner, but it seems like I might feel better living separately.
So do it his way. Unless it doesn't work, then change it to your way.
Oh, okay. You mean like try living together?
Yes. Why not?
Oh, okay.
But yeah, set up your, making a deal about time, I, we, and us, space, chores, maintenance, money, my money, your money, our money, and play, non-sexual play, and sexual play. So the one thing you've got to do is have a good set of boundary tools for the family if you choose to live together for no longer than 3 months. Relationships are 3 months perfect, 3 months imperfect, and then 3 months where you decide you're going to marry or mate, and the fourth 3 months are you keeping them and they keeping you because you're 51% valuable. You're not perfect, but you are valuable.
And any tips on how to deal with the kids? It seems like his kids, you know, come in at all different kinds of hours and do whatever
yes.
they want.
Just, that's right. Have the family set up the boundaries. Or don't put the family together until the kids are finished.
Yeah, that seems like the safer way. That could work out easily. Well, thank you so much. I have an engagement ring because of you, Pat.
That's fine. You can live with him. You can do either way.
No, I meant we got engaged because of your tools.
Good.
Thank you so much. And I teach other people about your tools as well. So thank you so much.
Good.
Also, I daughter and I'm 16, and I also use your tools with relationships.
Yay.
Yay.
That was my 16-year-old.
So exciting. Thank you so much, Pat.
Okay. Next.
Thank you, caller. Yeah. All right. Beautiful. Okay, so yes, this woman says, okay, so Dr. Allen, would you be able to do an appointment on the phone to do a test with my four-year-old, or?
The what?
The four-year-old. Would you be able to take an appointment for a four-year-old right now, Dr. Allen, or via?
Would I do that?
Mm-hmm.
I would rather that the younger. I'm grandma.
Right.
I would prefer a younger man or a younger woman that would replicate mom or dad.
Okay. Okay. All right. So
and there are child psychologists that would love to do this.
Are they ever using like the PTSD? You know, EMDR or TMS for children of that age?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Try everything professional, but I'm thinking that you need to take the child to a physical psychiatrist to mm-hmm. make sure there is no physiological problem.
Okay. She's taking notes. Yeah, she's taking notes and she's telling me, thank you so much. I'm scared. And I'm like, okay. So Dr. Allen definitely always has great solutions for things like that. So once again, I want to remind everybody, reach out Dr. Pat Allen for our phone appointments, info@drpatallen.com via email. I want to remind you, we have a fabulous video that you can watch right now on www.drpatallen.com. And I want to remind everybody, you can listen to all of our shows on latalkradio.com. And if you re-listen to the show, you'll be able to get all that information that Robert Storr put out for us today. And hear Dr. Allen use those tools in helping prevent or understand what's happening with somebody who may be depressed or suicidal. It's very important, especially during this time. Dr. Allen, what do you have to say before we go tonight?
The only way you know you love yourself or anybody else are the contracts you're willing to make and keep.
Most certainly. Again, I forgot to say this. Dr. Allen's book and a lot of our products, you're going to find them at oneistore.com. And they're brilliant. You know, one of my favorite is Over 50 Dating. I know we had a caller tonight that was asking about how many times around the sun and the significance. So Dr. Allen's got some amazing stuff at oneistore.com. Until next week, everybody take care, be safe, and love each other. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to On the Air with Dr. Pat Allen, Empowered Communication, right here on LA Talk Radio.